Unbelievable.
I can't hear you very well.
You can't hear? Well, I wasn't talking yet. Okay. Can you hear me now? Is it faint?
Yeah, I can hear you too well.
Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 222, not to be confused with the television series Room 222, even though this is episode 222, and we're doing it inside a room. And my co-host today is David Dedrick. Hello, David.
Hello.
David, have you seen either the film The Room or the film Room?
I have not seen either.
Have you seen
the film? Nor have I seen the TV show Room 222.
Have you seen Room with a View?
I have seen Room with a View. I like that film a lot.
Very good. And this is the end of room talk.
Is that the end of room talk?
Yeah. No. I was really kind of too young to see Room 222.
Yeah.
But they reran it later on.
Okay.
And I had a crush on Karen Valentine when I was a kid.
Okay. I don't know who that is.
Oh,
but
she's as pretty as her name.
Mm.
And she was a teacher. And basically, it was like it was a tough as nails kind
of. Teacher, teach me how?
Maybe. But it was one of those issue of the week. Things in high school, and you know,
was there one about PCP?
Probably.
Okay.
I bet you there was. I know there was one about leukemia, which is the first time I ever heard about cancer.
Okay.
Was that? And it was like,
really?
Oh, this kid's got leukemia. Everyone seems really sad.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's dead by the end of the episode. Ooh. Well, that's rough going.
But you never saw him before.
Probably not.
Yeah, that seemed to be the way of it.
Yeah, and his name was Luke. Leukemia. That was the other thing too. Ironically.
His name really was leukemia?
No, it was not. Oh. Of course not. That'd be absolutely stupid. But her name in real life is Karen Valentine, and she was lovely. So maybe it sounds
that's
like
stupid
that name
too.
Yeah, but it was like, you know, there's issues of race and issues of whatever, and issues of, hey, girls can't do that. We'll show you. And by the end of it, they could. And the school was, you know, tough when it needed to be tough, and it wasn't when it needed to be tough. And it ran for 5 years, that show, from like 69 to 74.
Yeah, I was too young for that.
Yeah.
Too young for that stuff.
But then they reran it, and give it a little look on the YouTube, and you go like, that's an interesting little show. It's all right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Plus, anyway, plus you majorly crush on the teacher.
Oh, pretty much. Yeah,
teacher,
she was she was on. I think why I got into the show was she was on Match Game and all those other game shows.
Okay.
She'd be on $20,000 Pyramid.
Okay.
And all those, and you'd be like, "Who's that?"
Is this what she did after her Room 222 career?
Maybe. During
the game show circuit.
I clearly remember.
Was she like on Love Boat?
Probably. Oh, probably.
You're agreeing with me, but not.
No, no, I'm sure she was on Love Boat. Okay. She made the rounds.
How
she
about did Fantasy Island?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Everything. She was on all the things that you were on.
Was she on?
Probably on Mannix. I don't know. She just did everything.
Was she on Third Rock from the Sun?
No, that's way later. Way later. You've jumped way ahead.
That's true.
Of the game. Settle down.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. That was my only reference to 222. Unless we're referring to 222, which is an extra large 22.
Do you like number things like that? I mean, I love that.
You like numerology?
I loved 11, 11, 11. Like writing down those numbers when I was at work. That was like a day that I look forward to, so that I could write 11, 11, 11.
Like, nice, because it looks like Woodstock talking.
Yes, that's exactly why I was looking forward to. No, I just like that. Like today at work, I had a sales order I had to write a bunch of tags for, and the order number was 764764.
Okay.
So I like that. I like that it's, you know, the two. Makes me happy. I don't know why.
I like odd numbers. I don't like even numbers.
Oh, you don't like even numbers?
I do not. I like odd numbers because I feel they're open-ended, and it feels there's still stuff to do. I think when you've got an even number, what it feels like to me is something is completed, and now we can die. Because it's done. And
so
I guess
you nervous the whole time you're an even number then?
I don't like them.
The whole year
I'm
you're
not
nervous.
A big fan of them, no.
Yeah.
Like this one, 2016. Ugh.
So you're not looking forward to turning 50?
You know what? That's such a big one that I think it's different. It'll be okay. Mm-hmm. But
by the way, it is all over.
Good.
Just so you know.
What a relief.
Oh, well.
Once again, it's all downhill. Sounds good to me. Whee!
Yeah, it depends what's the bottom.
Yeah.
It really does.
I mean, what do you
say? If it's all downhill and you're going into like a fountain of chocolate.
No, 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 no. No, you're saying there's a bottom. There isn't.
Yeah.
No, 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 no.
Oh, there's no bottom?
No, listen.
There's no end to the
downhill
road.
Listen to the phrase.
Yeah.
What's the phrase say?
It's all downhill from here.
Right. It's not, it's all downhill till the bottom. Okay. It's all downhill from here. It's just a never-ending downhill.
Yeah.
There's no bottom, brother.
Yeah.
And if there is a bottom, you won't know about
it. Because
you're
like
going to be
right?
gone yeah. for the bottom. Yeah. By the time bottom happens, poof, you will not be able to comprehend bottom. But it'll all just be downhill.
Yeah.
So just enjoy the ride. Whee! Hooray!
It is an odd expression. We've talked about it before, and now that you've made me think about it, I do think it is an odd expression.
Why is that?
Well, just the fact, it's all downhill from here. Like, is it? Wouldn't it be like it's all uphill from here? Like once you hit your 50s.
Yeah. Would you like now it to be all uphill?
Yeah. Now, like, when you get up in the morning, your legs are going to be sore.
Meh.
You know?
Depends
all
what you're doing.
From here.
Yeah.
No. My legs are sore every day.
Right. But that's because you do an amazing amount of exercise every day.
Well, I guess.
Yeah. If you had regular people legs, you know, and did regular people stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're lifting large amounts of weight and doing things, right?
Yeah.
So that's your legs are saying, hi, we're acknowledging what we did today.
Yeah.
Hey, remember when we did that thing? As your body, I'm just going to let you know. How's it going?
Mm.
Right. But your Good legs, point. Now, are your legs doing better as you've progressed with the work? Or
no.
Are they're consistently the same? Or was it like a big learning curve off the top?
No, it was really sore when I first started. Really sore.
Right.
Really sore. I had to go and buy insole inserts.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of things that go together, insole inserts that, because I was getting splint shins.
What is that?
That's when you...
I've heard of shin splints, but what are splin shins?
Oh, did I say the wrong way around?
Yes, you did.
Sorry. I was so concentrating on saying it right.
Oh, it sounded way worse than shin splints.
I messed
splin
it up.
Splin shins sounds terrible.
It does sound terrible.
Okay.
Sorry, I had shin splints.
Okay.
But you know what they are.
Yes.
And for our listeners, they make your legs sore. It's because you irritate the...
I make you reverse words sometimes.
You irritate some sort of thing that coats your bones, right? That's what shin splints are.
I think so.
Yeah. Horses can get it too. I guess
right.
All things that walk can get it.
Now, if a horse gets it, what do? You can't give a horse an insole.
No, you
can't.
Well, you can. Yeah, you can actually. I mean, you can give your horse therapeutic shoes, right? So you could...
I didn't know that at all.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, there are various kinds of... The most popular therapeutic shoes for horses, one is called the heart bar shoe. And that is a shoe that looks kind of like a heart. And the back of the shoe, you bend the iron over and make a kind of a V shape
right.
at the back of the shoe. And it... What it does is then you bend it down a little bit and it adds support to the frog, which is, if you look at a horse's foot, so let's imagine a horse's foot, it's a semicircle
right.
that goes around. And then as the semicircle is about to close, it doesn't close, it goes in a V shape and it goes up, back up in sort of the center of the foot, of mm-hmm. the sole of the horse's hoof. And that is called the frog. It's a insensitive soft tissue that underneath it has actual sensitive tissue there. And what it does is when a horse compresses its foot down onto the ground and say it goes down into the dirt, that will actually help. It aids in the blood circulation because a horse, its legs are so long and so it's hard for the body to fight against gravity. So
right.
the blood pooling down in the feet. So this helps. So when a horse is walking, it's actually helping its circulation.
Oh, neat. Okay.
And so the frog and the sensitive, insensitive frog and then the sensitive plantar cushion, it's called, that's underneath or above the frog, depending which way you're looking at the foot. So what it does is, because there's two major killers of horses. One is indigestion and one is something called laminitis. Indigestion is called colic. And because horses can vomit, but it's very difficult for them to vomit. If they eat too much or get some sort of stomach problem, instead of throwing up, what can happen is their stomach can twist
right.
and stop working. And it's very bad for horses. And there's lots of causes of it. Mostly it's from overeating. And so what happens is, then they end up with this, or they get too dehydrated, because it's another problem. Or if you have them, if they're living in a sandy place, if they're eating a lot of sand in with their feed, they can actually get sand colic, which is just like a huge amount of sand in their gut.
Mm.
And so, yeah, it happened to Lisa's horse. When I first started going out with Lisa, her horse got really, really sick from colic. And he had to get like a full stomach operation done to untwist the stomach. And it's very expensive. And when it's done, you have to spend a lot of time walking the horse to keep everything working. So yeah, so that's one killer. But the other problem for horses is a mysterious ailment called laminitis, which is it's a weird thing. Like the foot of the horse, it's really strange. Okay, you know how the outside of the horse's hoof looks.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got your outside wall of the hoof. Inside that, is a thing called the lamina, and it's this interlocking set of blood vessels and cartilage and all this stuff that basically then you have the coffin bone, which kind of floats in between the outer wall of, or the, you know, the hoof, the wall of the hoof, and has this lamina in between it and the, and so what can happen is the lamina, you know, horses can like overeat, they can be too heavy, it can happen during pregnancy, it can happen just because you looked at the horse the wrong way, and it has this weird breakdown, and the coffin bone, the bone inside the sole of the horse's, or inside the horse's hoof, begins to sink down. So it's often called founder because it's like a ship sinking. So the bone starts to sink mm-hmm. down. And in severe cases, it can go down and press right onto the sole of the horse's foot. And of course, all this damage that can occur from that. It's pretty terrible. And you can also get it from neglect. Like say someone leaves their horse untrimmed for a long time and their foot grows out into big kind of ski shapes. And so all that lamina is being torqued on because you've allowed their foot to grow. And so you know, they need to break their hoof over as they're walking their hoof. You know, they kind of walk over their hoof. So if you keep it, look, if you let it get too long, the leverage gets too difficult and it starts to wreck the foot. So I saw that a lot too when I was a farrier. So yeah, it's very, very bad. And it's kind of a mysterious disease because it has lots of different causes. And for a long time, and it's been a while since I've looked at the literature. Like when I was a farrier, I was more interested in it. I haven't looked for a long time. But, it's kind of like there's a lot of voodoo around it because there's a lot of treatments that work or don't work depending on the situation. One of them is called the heart bar shoe. And the reason it was developed, wasn't even developed. It was sort of a callback to an old shoe that was used for horses that were cart horses because they were walking on cobblestone streets and weren't getting their feet packed with dirt. They were getting founder. And so they developed this shoe that using this V that comes around, it supports the coffin bone in the foot and then the whole. So it you know, supports like the whole structure of the horse's leg. And so it can prevent the founder.
Nice. Okay.
And so they developed that as a way for, that's one kind of therapeutic shoe. Another one is called the egg bar shoe, and so called because it looks shaped like an egg. And so when you're making that shoe, you bend the heels of the shoe right around and you weld them together. And then you have a completely round shoe, and that's to support the back, the heel of the horse's foot. Another weak part of horses is a little bone. Well, it's actually a little pad. Like we have bursa as well. Like when we get tendonitis, mm-hmm. it's because we have a swollen bursa and it's causing the tendon to rub on the bone of your arm. So the tendon and the bone rubbing together and it hurts. Same for horses. They have this called a deep flexor tendon. It runs down the back of the leg and then goes around underneath the hoof and attaches to the coffin bone. And so as it goes down, it has to go past the pastern and the fetlock and stuff like that. It has to go past those. And so there's a bursa there. And then there's a little bone called the navicular bone. It's called that because it's shaped like a ship. And then there's a bursa and then there's a tendon. Mm-hmm. And so over years of use or through misuse, this bursa can wear away. And then it's just tendon onto bone.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's very painful for horses.
Yeah, it sounds really painful. Yikes.
And so the idea of the egg bar shoe is that you move the weight bearing of the horse away from its main part of its, you know, so you're moving it backwards and you're trying to relieve some of the pressure of that. And when you do it, you also bend up the toe of the shoe as well. And that helps the horse break over.
Right.
So it makes it easier for it to walk. So it's not having to push against the flatness of its foot. It has a little bit of a curve. And so it can walk more easily. So there's lots more. There's like crazy ones that if you saw them, you'd be like, what is that even for? Like, this one looks like part of like a catcher's mask, like, you know, like a baseball cat. It looks like that on the bottom. So it's all rounded with wire. You're like, I don't even know why would you do that? You know, it's just weird, but there's lots of different partly that's because I remember going down to a farrier convention and they had this big board there of all these shoes this guy had made. And they're all crazy shoes if you saw them. But he made them for specific circumstances, you know, and he's like, okay, maybe if I did this, it would help, you know, like this horse is doing this. So maybe if I put more weight on this side. So if I make a thicker branch on this side of the shoe, it will help the horse. So it won't keep hitting itself and cutting itself. And so it had all these various kinds of shoes this guy had made because, you know, for a long time, you know, at that time when horses were important, they were really important, but there's no research on what caused problems, you know? So out there was people who were just trying different things. And that's why I say it's voodoo, because you don't really know if it works. You know it worked that one time. right? So you stuck a pin in that doll and the person died. Well, voodoo works, right? I mean, it doesn't matter that he died of natural causes or whatever. You just know that you stick a pin. Well, that's it works. So every time I stick a pin in a doll, it's going to work. Of course, it probably won't. But once you've established that, that's horses.
Neat. So anyway, if you,
sorry if that was boring, everybody.
Not at all. No, stop it. Stop it. So when you wake up with your sore legs, could you make yourself some shoes? Could you? If you think like, think of yourself as a centaur man instead and go like, now I've got to make myself some shoes. Could you make yourself some shoes that would fix your problem?
Well, here's the thing, with
the abilities that you have as a farrier.
I have a little opinion on like what you're talking about. I mean, I'm talking about chronic ailments that are, you're just trying to ease a horse's pain.
Right.
Right? You know, there are schools of thought where they want to like change a horse's conformation through trimming or through shoes. The problem with
when you say conformation, what does that mean?
Conformation is how a horse walks.
I'm assuming you don't mean as in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, no, not conformation, conformation.
Understood.
Okay. Now, conformation is how a horse looks, how it moves. You know, like, so how its legs are, so you can have a horse that's cowhocked, you could have a horse that's bandy-legged, you could have a horse that, so just like us, right? So here's the thing, though. When you walk around, you develop, you have your way of walking.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone said, you're rubbing your foot, your left foot, and you're wearing down your shoe faster than your right, you should wear a special shoe that, changes the shape of your leg and stuff like that. Well, maybe that's okay, but also can cause a lot of problems because you're trying to manipulate how your leg works. Well, your leg's been doing that for a long time. Just to suddenly decide you're going to change how it works, it can cause other problems, up and down your leg that, just because you've straightened your foot, but now your knee, the way your knee worked, now it's different for you, right? So, I wasn't really a big fan of changing how horses, unless it was like a major problem, like a horse was striking, meaning when they were running, their back foot would go forward and it would catch the front foot and cut it, and stuff like that. Yes, in those cases, but if you're shoeing a horse properly, if you are, having a nice small foot, you're bringing the legs back under the horse, so it's not, its legs out in front of itself. But if you're making a horse so it's all nice and straight after you've trimmed a horse, after you've shod the horse, you shouldn't have those problems. Seriously, you shouldn't. Like, if you're trimming a horse properly, yes, there are some horses where it's just out and out. You just can't help it. That's just that horse. But most horses, once you've trimmed them properly or shod them properly, those kind of problems go away. And I don't think that changing how an animal that's 12 years old, how it runs or walks is going to help it, because you're just going to create other problems.
So with you, should
I just got to live with it.
Okay.
Because, the reason I'm sore isn't because of how I walk. The reason I'm sore is because of what I'm doing. So the idea that I can fix it, I could easily fix it by not doing that job.
Mm-hmm.
There's how you fix it. I mean, if you're sore from working, don't do that job. Find an office job that you
sit
down.
Do you take, like, painkillers or stuff in the morning?
No, I don't like that.
So you just
grin and bear it.
Grin and bear it?
Yeah. I walk out of it. Once I've walked around the house for a bit, I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm concerned for you. I don't want you to be sore all the time.
Thanks.
But it's all downhill from here. I'm worried about that.
Well, that's the thing.
It's
uphill from here.
Do you know what that's bad for is if you're like, say, a cow, because cows can't go, they can't go downstairs. Is that the thing with a cow?
A cow can't go downstairs. I think, I don't know why.
That's why all those cows live on the second story.
I think they could. I think it's just that because the way that they're shaped, they'd have a hard time seeing where their legs are going.
Right.
Because their head is so much farther over their legs.
Yeah. I mean, if you find a way for your cow to back up,
mm-hmm.
then it could do it. I think the mechanics would work.
I think if you led your cow down the stairs, you'd be okay.
All right. Cows aren't the everyone most who's out pliable. There right now who has a cow, we're going to ask you to do something. Try seeing if your cow can go down. Don't do like an escalator or something tricky. Don't be an asshole about it.
Don't do
but like escalator. Try taking your cow downstairs and see what happens.
Yeah. In your house.
Yeah. Otherwise, all cows are going to stay on the second floor.
One of Lisa's students, she has it's like an extreme mountain trail thing for horses to go on. So it does have like stairs. It has like a ziggurat that they have to go up the ziggurat.
Okay.
And down it. And then it has like a teeter-totter they have to walk across.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So Lisa actually rode this lady's horse that is like trained to do this.
Right.
She rode it on. And she said it was actually kind of interesting to do. It does sound kind of fun.
Speaking of animals, got a thing at our house now. We got like an upstairs neighbor who's got a dog, and they leave the dog during the day because they got work.
Yeah.
And they walk the dog at night. Oh, howls like nobody's business.
When they're away.
Yeah. It's the saddest howls. Like, it's gone from like...
Does it do it all day?
Pretty consistently. Wow. Yeah. And it's like deep, sad howls.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's hard. It's heartbreaking, man. It's like, I just want to go...
It's kind of annoying.
I want to find like... Nah, it's not annoying. It's sad. You know, and it's just like, there's like a window that's open and I just want to go up and throw bacon through it or something. I want to just do something. And I wish there was something that I could do, but I can't think of it. Like,
you have cats, so you can't have them in your...
We yell good dog upwards. Well, they got cats as well. So the dog is, you know, acclimated to cats.
Yeah.
And their cats are assholes too. So, you know, it's used to jerk ass cats. Maybe that's the problem, is it's up there with the jerk ass cats.
Yeah, yeah. They're bucking it all day.
Yeah, maybe it's seeing the cats leave and go like, what the is, you know. Yeah, there's a bit of us that's like, we'd walk the dog, but I feel like we're then going to become obligated to walk the dog consistently, and that's and that's a bit of a drag.
But no one wants that.
But it's just every day it's the sad howls of sadness, and you're just, it's just heartbreaking.
Hmm.
I'm working downstairs, and you're the...
It hasn't occurred to you that the person who lives upstairs is turning into a werewolf?
Nope.
Okay.
Well, it's not full moon.
That's true.
Are you thinking it's like all the time werewolf?
I always thought that.
Are werewolves all the time now, and not just 3 days
a
month?
Yeah.
Fuck.
That's the new thing.
That's the modern society. You know what I think that is? I think that's because there's plastics in the water and stuff. And it's like werewolf puberty is coming sooner.
Yeah.
Everything's altered for werewolves now. No, so that makes sense.
Steroids.
Now, I was asked to present you with something.
Oh.
I was at my Critical Hit show this week. And we have all, by the way, new system. It's not D&D anymore. It's like 13th Age or some such.
What? Oh, it's not D&D anymore?
No, it's another role-playing game that's open source. So it's...
Oh, did you get in trouble for D&D?
No, we didn't. But so we don't.
Okay.
We went with this.
Okay.
It's a little tricky, but it's fun. But one of our the people that
so you don't have your character cards anymore to look at and
I've got
and
know a one got? I've got a one sheet with various different things on it. You know, it's a little tricky. It's a little tricky, but it's fun. It worked out well. But the person who takes pictures of our show and watches our show is named Nathan Evans, and he said to me, "Make sure David gets this." And so I'm a man of my word. I'm going to give you this.
Thank
Why
you.
Don't you explain what it is?
This looks like a envelope. Envelope, please. It has an otter in it, or on it, I should say. There's a picture of an otter.
There's an otter, so you otter open the
envelope. It makes me happy because that reminds me of that meme that was going around that said, "Surely you've mistaken me for someone who builds a dam." And there's a picture of an otter. I love that. It's one of my favorite
memes.
Oh, that
is good.
It is a good one.
It's not a good one with an otter because it's not the right joke.
No. Surely you're mistaking me for someone who builds a dam.
Oh, because it's an otter. Yeah, right. You otter, be more careful.
It's not.
All right,
you
ought
not have said that.
All right, so
all right, I'm opening it up.
Using your finger as a letter opener.
As a letter opener, as a classic, right. Classic Dave.
This looks like a nice, classy card. What does the card say, David?
It says, "In deepest sympathy, thoughts and prayers are with you at this difficult time." Owen has $5. Nice. Wishing you comfort, wishing you peace. And he says, "Oh, you're still alive after all. Well done, sir. Have $5. Buy yourself some candy. Happy 50th. Nathan, thank you so much, Nathan. I really appreciate that, and that's great. I also appreciate the condolences, because yes, that's good that we got that came after all our downhill uphill talk. Too.
Yeah, it did actually. That's perfect. That was nice timing on that.
And that's great. I can put that $5. I'm not going to put it towards candy because you know it's Lent right now.
Right.
I will put it towards a meat product.
Okay, like a Slim Jim.
Thinking more like a Big Mac.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Snap into a Big Mac.
Although you know what, I really don't. I like McDonald's. I know there's people out there that
you only like the one burger.
Poo-poo it. Yeah, really, I do. Because here's the thing: I actually like Filet-O-Fish too. But here's the thing: when I was a kid, I had a Big Mac, and I loved it so much that that's all I wanted to have. And when you go there, I don't go there very much. So when I go there, I don't want to switch off the thing that I love, so I can try something else that I might not like very much.
Okay.
So I just stick with what I love, which is a Big Mac, fries, and a Coke.
I think you would enjoy a Big Angus.
Mm.
I think you would. I think
Doesn't
you
would have that sweet Thousand Island dressing on it like a Big Mac
mixed
does.
With ketchup or whatever. You know what you can always do? You can always say to them, "Could I have an Angus with
you can do that, you're right,
with the Big Mac sauce?"
Because I didn't know this, but you can get like a McDouble, which is a very cheap burger, and you can ask them to Big Mac it, and they'll put Big Mac they'll put the special,
because they used to have the Little Mac, which was basically that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of burgers you would have enjoyed, the other day we went to the new Storm Crow.
Okay, tavern. Where's that? That's...
That is on Broadway, near Granville.
Okay.
really close to the Earls.
Almost exactly next door
to the Earls.
Okay.
We tried to go there once before. We were told 2-hour wait. We went, fuck you, and we left. And
at the Stormcrow?
Yeah.
I just want to tell you something. I was setting us up there for advertising, some sponsorship from Stormcrow Tavern.
Okay.
I think you've blown it.
Okay. I don't think so, because I went and we had a nice meal later.
Okay. So you had a killer burger there?
So here's what we did. We went back like another night.
Sure.
And like, I think the problem with like, it's going to be 2 hours is everyone's playing Monopoly, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's playing long games, right? You go there. Yeah.
Risk games going Monopoly.
So we ended up playing Mastermind. My sister-in-law had never played it. So she kicked my ass in it. Oh, she never played it. Just like smoked me.
I have a good system.
I'm sure you do. Mm. I thought I had a good system. I did not. Anyhow, so I'm looking at the menu. And
there was a mirror behind you.
Maybe. I order the Hasselhoff chicken.
Okay.
It looks pretty good.
Sure.
And then they go, we're out of chicken. Like, okay. So I do a quick scan.
So then you were crawling around on the floor saying you wanted your chicken.
Good. That's a good reference to what it is. So then I went with the D&D burger.
Okay.
Here's how the D&D burger works.
Okay.
Everything that's on the burger, basically,
yeah.
You roll for.
Ooh.
So you got the 20-sided die,
yeah.
And you roll, and it's like, you got tomatoes. You got like three toppings. Tomatoes. You got onions. You got this, and you get your sauces. You got sriracha ketchup.
Mm-hmm.
You got this. You got that. Okay, and then you roll for patties.
Ooh.
Got a 20.
You got a 20?
Triple patty burger. Oh.
You had to have it.
Hold it. Yeah, I had to take one of the patties off and like eat it separately and like give. Actually, I ended up giving it away. It was a really, really good burger, but it was very fun to roll for everything.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
To a fussy eater, it's a nightmare
because
you don't get to pick your thing. But my favorite thing at a sushi restaurant is omakase, where you get the chef to pick what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
I love going to a restaurant.
I thought that's where the chef comes out in. No, forget it.
And crashes his plane into your table? Is that what you're going to go with?
Yes.
That's fine. It's a long time since that happened. I don't think that's racist. Is it?
It just felt wrong.
Yeah, right. Fair enough. But I like going to a place and like, if there's like a price fix menu and there's a special, and then you get these three things. I'm like, that. I'll take that. I always like to go to a restaurant and like not order the thing that I want, but the thing that is going to be presented. I like that a lot better.
Oh, really?
So this was nice for me. It was like, oh, a random burger. That sounds great.
Mm.
I won't know what's coming. It'll be fantastic. And it was actually really, really good.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
So another time when we have the time, we should probably go there. And I can't guarantee that you would succeed with that. And you would probably not like that because you like to pick your own toppings. It was really dandy.
It does sound interesting. So the toppings coincide with the number on the...
That's right. So you roll for toppings, you roll for sauces, you roll for bun, type of bun.
Oh.
You roll for amount of patties. Mm. You can roll for side dishes if you want a little extra. Otherwise, it just comes with fries. Yeah. So, you just roll the dice over and over again, and she just marks it down, and off you go.
That's fun. It does sound kind of fun. I might be disappointed in my results.
You might be. It might go terribly wrong, but I'm all for that. I was going, I'm going to get peanut butter on this son of a bitch.
Going to get an egg.
Speaking of gross burgers and such.
Were we speaking? You were speaking of a burger that you really liked.
Yeah, but it could have been if it was peanut butter was on it. That's where I was tangenting from. Peanut butter on a burger is
I have had peanut butter on a burger.
And?
It's okay.
It's not good.
Have you had it?
It's bad. It's a terrible thing to do.
I don't think it's bad.
It's bad.
Okay.
It's okay if you have it on a chicken burger because you're almost getting that kind of spicy peanut sauce on a chicken.
Right.
But you don't want spicy peanut sauce on beef, really, do you? Like beef burger? No.
Yeah.
But take it outside. But I've been thinking about this whole Trump situation.
Okay.
And I'm thinking like, is there anyone that
is
could...
Is there a Trump situation?
Yeah, there is. Is there anyone that could...
I'm kind of looking forward to
he's
this.
He's leading in the polls.
Yeah.
He's leading in the everything. Here's the only person I think that could possibly beat Trump.
Yeah.
Guy Fieri.
Really?
Yeah. I think he appeals to the same kind of mindset,
mm-hmm.
but he is, but he's even more but he likes, flashy.
But he, well, he appeals to the same mindset, but he likes Mexican food.
He likes Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
He's not big on gay people.
He's not?
There's been things on a show where he's gone to a restaurant where it's like a gay couple running it,
and
he's been mad at his staff for setting that up.
Really?
Yeah. So that's on record, but that's the situation.
I don't like that.
Come on, Guy Fieri. But he's only got that going. Like the rest, you're right. He's pro-Mexican food.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And he doesn't want to build a damn wall. I don't want to sound condescending. Okay.
I love gay couples. Like, I like meeting gay couples. I always think they're like the nicest people.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
And you know, I hate them. But so we were fair. We balanced each other off, right? I'm an extreme homophobe, right? We've established that. Have we not established that on the show?
I don't think we have, actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm glad we finally revealed that. You and your YouTube comments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boo. Elton John. Get back to your wife. She misses you.
Yeah.
Make it work.
Make it work.
Yeah. Hey, right. It's McMillan and wife. Yeah. Okay, Rock Hudson? McMillan and wife. Wow, that's what I say.
Not only are you a homophobe, you are an old-timey homophobe.
Old-timey. That's right.
All my references are from 100 years ago.
Yeah. So, but I think like he's got that kind of, you know, if he could be in a debate and Donald
I didn't
Trump...
want that to sound condescending, by the way. I just meant that they're so charming. How could you not want to meet?
Well, some aren't charming. Some are jerks.
I'm sure some are jerks, but I've never met any.
Trust me, some are jerks. That's
I guess
true.
So.
Yes. Yeah, now, but even through, now that, I feel like there's nothing I could say because I could like go, well, there's these ones are nice. And it's like, well, of course they're fucking, they're like anybody. They can be assholes. They can be nice.
I know what you mean, but there's something else about it that's anyway.
I will say
on.
Because most of the, one has biological child, but most of the gay couples I know that have kids because they're adopted, mm-hmm. you actually, as when you adopt a kid, you have to really work for it. So it's not like, ugh, we're having a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. It's okay. And we got to go to that meeting and this and prove this and show this. And so when they get a kid, they're usually super parents because, you know, they've really worked it.
Sorry, everybody.
A siren is going by. As you know, the rules of the game are take a drink. And if you can guess what it was, you can take two drinks. What do you guess it was? Was it a fire truck? Was it a police car? Was it an ambulance? Was it a hazmat truck? What was it? Was it the Ecto-1? It was an ambulance.
It was a tow truck.
No, it was an ambulance.
I think I mentioned before that our priest at our church is gay,
mm-hmm.
and he's married, and they have a son that they've just newly adopted. They've had him for a while, and now they finally, you know, it takes a while for all the paperwork to get done, I guess.
Yep.
There's a lot of T's to cross and a lot of I's to dot.
There's a lot of T's to cross when you're in the church, because that's how you make a crucifix.
That's true. And... yeah, it's interesting because his son often comes to church during services. Obviously, he doesn't leave him out in the parking lot in the car with the window rolled down a little bit. And what's fun is that his...
No Jesus for you.
Yes. His son is, I think, is only 4.
Okay.
So he's still very young. And
not old enough to sin, according to the Catholic Church, yet. That comes at 8.
Is that right?
8 is the age of sin.
8 is the age of sin.
That's the age where you're responsible for your sins. And I remember being told that at 8 and thinking, why didn't you tell me this at 7? I could have got away with anything.
You're right.
It really made me mad as an 8-year-old going, what?
I've been gypped.
I had diplomatic immunity.
I could have shoplifted some candy bars.
I could have done anything. I could have killed a guy. I got away fresh. I was like, what are you going to do? I'm 7.
I think you get away fresh. You're just specifically like spiritually fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But not societally.
What are they
going to
do? Put me in the 7-year-old juvie? Yeah,
they put you in the slammer.
7-year-old juvenile delinquents. That's an adorable juvenile delinquents. That's a ball pit they just put you in. Doing hard time in the ball pit.
So what's kind of fun is that his son will like interrupt the service. Like he'll be like,
is that right?
He'll be talking. And our priest is, he's an amazing speaker. Like I've never heard anyone like we talk, but he can like talk and he doesn't like read from a prepared sermon. He has no paper in front of him. He just stands there and he talks. And he does like, you know, whatever, how long a sermon is, 4 hours, whatever, you know how it feels. But no, I'm just joking. They're pretty good. But he'll be talking and then his son will come up and he'll be like pulling on his cassock and like, daddy, daddy. And then he has, you know, he'll lift him up and hold him and he just carries on speaking. He doesn't go, where was I? No, he just keeps carrying on. He doesn't go, it's amazing, but it's so cute. His son is really fun. Like when we were at our Ash Wednesday service, his son had to go to the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
and so he came in and quite, you know, even though he was doing the Ash Wednesday service, he's like, I have to go now. Like we have to go. So he's like, oh, okay. So he left, you know, and so luckily our associate priest was there, so she took over the service. But
and there was no surprise baptisms.
There was no very very little baptisms on Ash Wednesday.
Well, I'm just saying from the kid who had to pee.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. No, I think it was a step up.
Oh, okay.
A step up. He's going through toilet training. So that was good that he made it.
Okay. So this wasn't a Genesis. This was whatever the second book of the Bible
is. This is the second book,
What is the second book of the Bible?
Is it
It's not Exodus, obviously.
I think, isn't it Exodus?
Really? You go right from Genesis to Exodus?
I think so.
There's nothing in between those?
I don't think so.
Wow. Okay.
Because what are there? There's Genesis, Exodus, Joshua, Deuteronomy, Leviticus. That's five. The Pentateuch.
Really? Okay. I'm looking this up.
You look it up. I could be wrong. It's been a while since I cracked the Old Testament.
Okay.
And let's not get onto that again. Because we spent a lot of time talking about it last week.
That's all right. And now we're on horses this week. I mean, you get that kind of variety with this show.
We're all over the place. Are you really looking it up?
I am looking it up. I'm curious.
Thanks.
It just feels like it's weird that it would go like right to that.
Genesis is it's action-packed, Genesis. Like you think, like all the stories that you know, almost all of them come out of Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And a lot of hit songs came out of the band Genesis as
Abacab.
Well.
It's the only one I can think of. Yeah. I like the earlier stuff that was like 20-minute long songs like Supper's Ready. That's my idea of great Genesis.
Oh, just list these in order, you stupid internet. Don't give me all this business. Just put it all. What are you giving me, like Tobit and Judith in additions to Esther? I don't need this. I just need you to tell me the business.
Isn't Tobit and stuff, that's the Apocrypha, isn't it?
Dude, I don't know. You tell me. You know this. All right, hold it. It goes Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy.
Oh, Numbers, sorry.
Yeah.
So Joshua isn't there yet. Okay, Joshua
then
comes
Joshua,
after.
Judges, oh, okay. Samuel, Kings, Chronicles, Chronicles.
Joshua, Judges, Ruth, actually, should be.
Oh, is it? Oh, you're right. Joshua, Judges, Ruth, Samuel, Kings, Chronicles.
That's your mnemonic device for that.
Ezra, what's that one? Nehemiah?
I guess.
Do 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 do.
Nehemiah.
Do 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 do.
Nehemiah.
Do 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 do. And that's the books of the Bible.
I forgot about Numbers. Yeah. So it's
I have read the darn book, you know, in the past.
Mm.
I forced myself to read the whole thing.
Which version did you read?
I read.
You didn't read the King James, did you? Incredibly inaccurate.
I'm trying to think if I've got it here. Incredibly inaccurate.
Yeah, very badly translated.
Oh, okay.
King James Bible. Yeah,
all right,
yeah.
Fine.
Full of errors.
All right. Well, look, I can't be a Bible snob.
That's fine. I don't have to be a Bible snob. It's just that there are Bible snobs that they will pull out the King James and wave it in your face. You're like, yeah, they've kind of moved on from that, by the way. They recognize there are errors because those people were working with sources that, you know, they didn't have as many sources as we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're translating from Greek to Latin to English.
Mm-hmm.
Made a lot of mistakes there.
And speaking of not mistakes, don't make a mistake on this. What's going by? Ambulance.
Busy night. Good.
So please have two drinks if you said ambulance.
Two drinks.
No, I remember when people.
That seems to be the safe bet, by the way, everybody. If you want two drinks to say ambulance,
yeah,
then
we have a lot of ambulance work going
nine
by.
Nine times out of ten.
Well, I just remember like when I was younger, and yeah, I'd bring up like something about the Bible, and someone would go, "What version?" And I'm like, "I don't know this version." I'm like, "That's not the good version. I don't know what version it was."
Well,
but it really felt
yeah.
like, and we didn't have the word for it then. Mm-hmm. It felt like hipster Bible fans who were just like, "Well, yeah, if you like that version, that's fine."
Yes,
I prefer the monkeys before they did the.
I prefer the original.
That's right.
Yeah, I prefer the monkeys before they did that too. A lot of filler. I don't know what you're doing, but there are biblical versions that are what's the word I'm looking for that are
hilarious.
Hilarious, the jokester's Bible. No, that you know they have an agenda. You know, so they translate stuff in a particular way that kind of pushes their agenda, whether it's a conservative or liberal agenda. There are biblical versions that kind of go either direction. And so people who are of this faith, you know, of this particular branch of Christianity, say evangelical, who, you know, is conservative evangelicals will really like that Bible. And people who are more my thinking, you know, will prefer this Bible, you know, this version of the Bible. So that, you know, but overall, those sort of the differences aren't that significant. It's just more. It's more how they translate stuff like people together. Like so, mine either does both genders or makes it genderless or whatever. And then the other version, it's all like everyone's sons and brothers, and God is all like, you know. So it just depends where you are.
How does the Joe Kubert Bibles stack up?
Well, he only did the Genesis.
He only did the story of Genesis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to ask
you. I mean, it's a lot of stuff.
I've never
right?
really looked inside it.
Mm-hmm.
So does it? Let me ask you if he does this. Does it start with a lot of detail and then by the end of it, real simple?
No, I think he kept. I mean, it's not all of Genesis as well. It's select stories from
okay.
Genesis.
So I see a lot of artists do that when they decide to do like Bible stories.
Yeah.
It's just like gorgeous, amazing first five pages.
Yeah.
Realize what they're in for. Mm-hmm. Simple, simple close-ups by the end, you know.
Yeah, I mean, R. Crumb did Genesis, and he did an absolutely faithful version of it. And it's so faithful in a way, it's a little dull. It's kind of like watching the film Watchmen. You know, because you can be so faithful to your source that you kind of lose the magical weirdness of it, you know, because Genesis is kind of crazy.
Yeah. No. Why am I? Here's why I'm laughing is because what's his name? Zach. What is the fellow's name who did Watchmen?
Zach Galifianakis.
Zach Galifianakis. Why? That's not at all true. He's also the person who's doing Batman v Superman. But he was quoted. I was reading a quote about you know, when he did Watchmen. Mm-hmm. He said he did Watchmen to save it from the Terry Gilliams of the world because he didn't want that kind of adaptation of Watchmen.
See, that's the wrong attitude.
And he also feels that his films are much more intelligent than the way that they're received. People don't get his movies.
Okay, that's possible, I guess.
No, it's wrong.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, it's bullshit. It's not.
Let's take a different comic book
Sucker
adaptation.
Sucker Punch is not deeper than you think it is.
No, that's you got sucked. When that movie's over, I turned to my daughter and said, we got sucker punched.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I got the lobotomy by the end of that. I'm like, please, me too. One for me, Mr. Ham.
Yeah.
You know, get this out of my head as well, please. Mm-hmm. Tap, tap. Happy as a clam.
Yeah. One flew over the lingerie dress.
It's not bad.
Thank you.
It's very witty.
Oh, thank you.
Good for you.
Thanks.
And wit is the second best form of humor there is.
What's the first best?
It kind of gets laughs.
Oh! So, that cat needs to be here. Ow. I was going to say something now. Oh, 300, for instance. Like that film, you hear all this great stuff about that movie. Then you watch it and you're like, what was the fuss? Like, this is a terrible movie. And what really killed me when I was watching it wasn't the fact that they threw a guy down a well. I mean, that was dumb, but that wasn't like a deal breaker.
And then afterwards he goes, well, well, well.
That was a deal breaker. That is the third lowest form of comedy.
What and,
was
that's the best? The whole truth.
This is the pits.
If there's water down there, let us know and we'll throw in a bucket.
But was the scene in the film, okay, like the idea of the movie is there's 300 guys.
Yep.
And they hold off the forces. So apparently it's an army of Goths that come to attack them, right? So they have this huge army of Goths that are going to attack them. Mm-hmm. All these people wearing all this jewelry in their noses and stuff like that and javelins through their lip. And you're just like, who are these guys? What, tattoos? And you know.
It's basically
like a coffee shop is attacking you.
Yeah, it's like when you don't have the internet. Mm-hmm. And stuff to do.
Yeah.
You get bored and you shove things in your face.
So
don't tell me the old days were better with people shoving shit in their faces.
I think that still goes on, by the way.
Yeah, but not to that degree.
Have you seen people's ears sometimes?
I have seen people's ears.
That's not, there's the thing people do now that you just can't come back from that.
Okay, sorry to interrupt your thing.
Sure.
Now look, you know how people are doing that ear thing with the hole in the thing? All right. Now, if you're a smart guy, here's what you want to, or gal. Here's what you want to be doing.
That's right. You be this version of the Bible, not this
conservative evangelical. Here's what you want to do.
Okay.
Realize that people are going to want to take those earrings out at some point in the future, the hoops.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't want that. What you then do is you make yourself up an iPhone or whatever that's that shape that you can just put right in that hole.
Uh-huh.
Now, all of a sudden, it's perfect. It's a perfect phone. Mm. And it goes right in that hole. And you know all these people have that hole. Yeah. And now it's useful. And people go, you're on the cutting edge. You look great. You look great with that future-y hole filled with that technology.
I don't know. I don't think that would be an improvement. But if you say so.
Please continue.
You know what? I really cannot remember where I was going. Oh, okay. 300. So so the idea of the army of 300 people holding off 10 million other guys.
Yep.
Because they
with
set
their
up,
abs.
They, with their abs. Very important. They're computer-generated abs. They hole up in this canyon, basically.
Yep.
But as soon as the movie starts, they run out of the canyon, and then they're like actively engaging it just in the open area. And you're like, wait a second. I thought that the point of the story was that they're in a canyon or in this gorge or wherever it is, this narrowing part of this place, and they're able to hold off this giant army. Not that they run out into the open where they can get hit by arrows and everything else and spears that these guys pull out of their faces and throw at them. You know, the idea of the story is that they stay rather boringly inside this little place and fight.
I walked. out of that movie. I will say I walked when we got to 100, and I went, I'm done. This is
100, what?
100 guys dead.
Why, did they have a countdown?
I know they didn't, but oh, okay, I say, okay. I say it counting. In a, I'm playfully jokey oh, okay. way, Dave. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry. I thought you literally.
To the way this works, when episode 222. Anyway, yeah, and I was like, yeah, this is not good. Bye. And so I left because, yeah, I don't care. But I get that.
Well, I watched it because I heard it was good.
Yeah, and I think there's certain fellas who okay, listen. There's certain people that will like to see it for the muscles. You're going to see like a lot of glistening muscles through this whole thing, and that's appealing. And there's some guys who are like workout guys who like are all for this. And there's kind of a macho culture,
I guess,
that's also behind this. And it's like, yeah, men working together, we like that kind of thing. Hooray! And so there's that. And there's some people who like that kind of historical, fan fiction-y kind of thing, almost the same people like Renaissance fairs. They like this kind of shit. And that's fine. Yeah. And there's some people that really like Frank Miller. And that's fine. And they'll go see Sin City 2. And then there's the rest of the people. And I'm one of the rest of the people. It's fine.
Can I put myself in that group as well?
What's that?
The rest,
you're the rest of the people?
Yeah, I'm the rest of the people.
And you
I there. Didn't walk out, though, because I couldn't be bothered to get off the couch.
Okay. Sorry to have interrupted you. But yeah, when I read that quote, it was like, I don't think your films are... You can't also say that my films are smarter than people think they are. That's a weird thing to say.
Not when you've made Sucker Punch. You pretty much cashed your check then, your integrity check. No, that's not what I was looking for, but you know what I mean.
I mean, I'll say this about his films. It looks like you put some work into him. It looks like you
does
work.
He?
Yeah,
It looks like some people put a lot of work on their laptops into his films.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's way too CGI-y. Mm. You know, that's enough of that.
Yeah.
You know,
No one likes it. I mean, people like CGI, but they like it in the sense that they don't want to know that it's CGI.
Unless it's full CGI, in which case you'll enjoy an Inside Out and go like, good.
Oh yeah,
I'm all in.
That's fine. But that's not really CGI.
Well, it is CGI. It's all CGI.
I know what you mean, but it's not. It's more. It's more animation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I guess CGI is animated. You're right. I'm being dumb.
No, it's okay.
I'm being kind of silly, I think it's slightly different in the sense that it's not pretending to be reality. You know,
I still don't think we as humans, actors, have mastered looking in the right fucking place. I think, like, when you see an actor doing stuff with CGI characters, mm-hmm. it still doesn't read. It
doesn't read right.
It doesn't read right. Yeah. Like, I get that they're looking at a tennis ball that's on a stick.
On a stick.
And that's Stuart Little. And you've got I love you, Stuart Little. I think there's something to do with just, this is my theory, is that it's the wrong amount of mass. Like, if there's something that's a larger thing in a room, you react in a different way than you react to a smaller thing. You can say this smaller thing is a bigger thing. Now, pretend it's a bigger thing, but you still don't react in the same way. Your focus is different. So it maybe that's what it is you're looking at something that's smaller than it should be bigger. So you're actually looking in the wrong way. You're looking farther than you should when a thing is actually closer to you. And maybe as people, we can read those subtleties when you blow a face up that big or you put it on an HD screen and it just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who got it right? Gene Kelly, Dancing with Jerry Mouse and Anchors Away.
Now, was there a little person there, or did they do anything there?
I don't think there was a little
person. It was just
a
thing.
There.
It was just like leave the space.
Him dancing and then...
Yeah.
Because he choreographed the dance. So and then I guess he gave... You know what? This is what I'm sure...
But I'm betting that Gene Kelly has training in mime. Because he did a lot of that stuff. Like, he would do stuff, dance moves where he'd pretend to, like, have a rope and basically do that mime thing of, like, whoop. You know, you could tell, if he wanted to do the wall, he could do the fucking wall.
He could do the wall.
So he can mime a mouse in a way that a regular actor can't do that mime thing.
Yeah. I'm sure that either he or someone else danced that dance, and then it was used as a form of you know, not completely doing the type of animation where they trace the human actors.
Yeah.
I can't remember that type of animation.
Rotoscope.
Rotoscoping, yeah. Obviously, it was a mouse, so it'd be hard to rotoscope a human into the mouse. But you could figure out the moves and stuff like that. And it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, it's surprising that they didn't do more of that stuff. It was so successful.
Bit of a stunt.
It's a stunt, yeah. Bring the stunt out. Yeah. You know, why not do more?
You can see the same thing about Roger Rabbit. I mean, they could have done more.
I think they did try. I think there was a lot of people that tried with like Cool World, and they tried to do the same thing over and over again. Yeah. And just like
the Cool World was Ralph Bakshi, which is pretty much a guarantee of not so great.
Right. Which was, you know, here's a cartoon woman. What does she need? Needs to get laid. Then she'll be real. Okay, Ralph. We got some issues to work through. All right. It's fine.
A young Brad Pitt.
That's true.
Yeah.
What was the film he did right before that where he was like huge hair?
Johnny Suede.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that and guy's that, going places.
And then if you watch the film by that director, now, sorry, guys, this is me you're talking about, so I don't remember any of this stuff. But
all you know why? Because he knows all that horse stuff.
Living in Oblivion?
All this horse stuff is like pushing.
Is that what it's called, Living in Oblivion, with Steve Buscemi as a director?
Okay, and, then, and Peter Dinklage?
Is he in that?
He's the little person. Okay. He's the little person who has the big speech of just like, why am I in this?
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right.
A dwarf is in a dream? Oh, yeah, of course. You're going to have a dwarf in a dream. Yeah.
But then there's an actor in that playing Brad Pitt in Johnny Suede, because he was so impossible on that film that the director then wrote a script featuring this arrogant, egomaniac actor, who's just stupid and impossible.
If you haven't seen Living in Oblivion, see Living in Oblivion.
It's a good film. I wish I could remember who the director was.
Yeah, well, I could look it up, but you'd get
mad
at me.
Does he still do things? I would get mad. I would get furious. But you know, it's funny, like, there was that time period where, the 90s basically, when you had films like that. I mean, I think that time is gone now in a way, mm-hmm. that there's not that kind of money to make Uli's Gold or the other director by that, the other movie by that, or all the right.
Do you think the situation with that was because that was sort of the start of the VHS culture, and so you could run a movie briefly in theaters, mm-hmm. you know, try to get whatever you get out of that. Yeah. But then if you had a weird but interesting film, you could make some coin back in VHS. Yeah.
In the video stores. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably. Because there were some good films that came out of that time period that you just don't, I mean.
Everyone watched Repo Man on VHS, it felt like. Mm-hmm. I know it would show in movie houses, but that, you know, the majority of times I'd see it, it would be that. And nowadays you don't see it at all.
Yeah.
But it seemed like it was really of the time.
The time. And I guess there are still films that are getting made that are kind of offbeat. I mean, I would say that, is it The Room? The new
Room.
Room. I mean, that's kind of an offbeat film.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to at some point.
And then, but yeah, it just feels like you just don't, like, I don't know. It's just weird. Like, you know what? You wonder why, like, Whit Stillman didn't make films for a long time. Well, I think because that kind of source of funding for films dried up. And it was hard for him to, you know, when he's kind of bringing these kind of crazy projects, I mean crazy in the sense that they weren't focusing on what he was known for. There wasn't about a particular class of New Yorkers. You know, he was doing like, I want to do a film about Jamaica, like ska, like in the 60s. And he wanted to do a film set in China. You know, and people are like looking, well, they're like, well, if you want to do a film about some, you know, upper class kids talking to each other, well, doing something, we'll give you money for that, but we don't want to give you money for doing a ska movie. You know, like that's not, you know, so I guess, you know, so when the fun, that kind of, not that it was easy to get, but it was sort of easier to get. Because there's movies like, was it Carl Foreman, that film with Bill Paxton and Billy Bob Thornton, if that is his name?
Thornton, yeah.
One False Move, I think it's called, where.
I'm not sure.
Where it's a really, really good film. Like Bill Paxton's like, okay,
this is one of those situations where people are screaming now at their
This is from memory, but Bill Paxton's like a sheriff and Billy Ray Thornton. That's what it is, right?
No, Billy Bob Thornton.
Is Billy Bob? That seems wrong. That seems too hick.
Okay.
Change it,
Billy. I'm sorry about that, but that's his name. All right, go
change
ahead.
Change it, Billy Bob. But anyway, Billy Bob is like an escaped convict who's coming back and they know he's coming.
I can't help you. I wish I could change his name for you.
I'm going to say it's Billy Ray Cyrus because that seems less hick to me.
Sure. All right.
So anyway, Billy Ray's coming back. He's like an escaped convict and he's coming back. And so this Bill Paxton's like supposed to protect his wife. Because they know he's coming back to her, and I guess also capture him and his gang. It's a good film, though. It's really good, but it's like a small film. Like it's not a big budget or anything. It was a good film. It was a good film, and you know that just like I feel like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, they all kind of benefited from that time period. There's lots of films you could probably Spanking the Monkey, the first David O. Russell film.
Yeah, I remember like all of these films were something kind of special you had to go out and see, and you know maybe then you'd get later on VHS, or maybe you'd be inspired by getting something weird on VHS and go, who's this? Oh, this is this director. Oh, what else are they doing? You gotta pick up a film thread or something and try and figure that out. And it's like, they got a new film out. Okay. I'm kind of like that with Stephen Chow right now. I just found out Stephen Chow has a new film, The Mermaid, which is out.
Oh, I did not know that.
That just broke all the box office records in China. Just like smoked Star Wars. Just like, blah. And his last film, too.
It was okay. I thought that was an okay film.
Which one?
The last one.
The one about demons? And, I thought it was kind of fun. You know, it wasn't
the
his best.
Wasn't
it
was great,
no,
but
it was no Kung Fu Hustle. It was
no Shaolin Soccer.
It was, yeah, that's
no
true.
No QX, whatever that one was called.
But it had some dark, scary stuff, and it had some interesting stuff.
You seen the one where the little boy gets the alien, meets the alien? Have you?
I have.
You didn't like that one?
Maybe my expectations were too high on that
quite
one.
A bit.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking forward though to the mermaid one. I want to see
your expectations are too high.
Could be.
Here's what I heard. It sucks. I've heard there's something fishy about it.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it's quite the tale. Thanks for joining us on Dad Jokes. If you've got a dad joke, please send it.
You did it a while ago and you didn't call it a dad joke. You were going all about that well.
It's fine and fine.
Ugh, it's okay for you.
I think, yeah.
I'll do one thing.
You had to go out and hunt these things, and now I feel they're almost all delivered directly to you via the Netflix or what have you.
Some of them are.
I mean, there's some weird stuff on. I mean, that was the nice thing about the last Stephen Chow movie. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, oh, I totally missed that. I never heard of it. Let's go on Netflix. They got it. Boom. I'm watching it. I'm enjoying it. Hooray. You know, like otherwise, how would I have found that thing?
And I guess you can still have the odd stumble. Like it was Lisa actually. She just had the tea.
Have you tried Narcos? Because they've recommended that a couple of times.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It's
good. And Fuller House is now coming up quite a bit.
Is that right? That's the new one?
Yeah.
Which I heard is about, what is about actually? The
Fuller Brushman.
Fuller Brushman. It's a house full of Fuller Brushmen. They all put their foot in the door. No one can close the door in the house.
Nope.
There's always a foot in the door. Lisa was watching a movie and I caught a bit of it and I thought that looks really interesting. I'm going to set it to record when it's on again so I can see it all. And it was film. I think I'm sure I talked to you about it. It was called Teenage Lust.
I'm not sure.
And, it was an interesting film. Like it starts off like a typical high school scene, you know, and then we have the boy who's a little bit of a nerd, a little bit of an outsider, and he'd like to know some girls, but he can't because he's such a nerd. And his friend, played by the boy who was in Spy Kids.
Okay.
Says to this boy, he's like, you should do some card tricks for a girl. They'd be really impressed. So he does a card trick for this girl. He does a trick where, you know, he fans out the card. She picks one, puts them back in. Then he can't find it. And then she's like, ugh, you loser. And starts walking away. He's like, look in your bra. And she looks in her bra strap is the card. She's like, how did you do that? He goes, magic. I can't tell you. He's like, oh, that's so cool. You should come to my party on such and such. And he's like, oh, I'd love to, but I have to go to church. Then once again, she's like, ugh. But the thing that was funny was his family goes to the Church of Satan. So it's like this weird twist, right? His parents are Satanists. And I won't go into it anymore. But what's interesting is it's directed by Blaine Thurier, our friend, Blaine Thurier.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was written and directed by him. And it has Carrie Elles as a great leader of this church. And yeah, it's really good.
And where was this? Where did you watch this?
It was on the Movie Channel. Like Movie Central, I guess it's called Movie Central. And it was filmed in Winnipeg.
And Blaine, people would know from his work as a cartoonist, and also he's done other films.
Yeah.
He did one with a guest we had on the show, Robert Dayton. I forget what it was, where he was like a porn actor?
He wasn't a porn actor, no.
Wasn't he?
He was just a guy who he felt if he wished to make it so, it would happen.
Uh-huh.
And so, it kept happening for his friend and not for him.
Okay.
His friend played by a former friend of the show, Shane Nelkin. And I wish I could remember that movie was called.
Was Stephen Hamm in that as well?
Yes. Stephen Hamm was also a cool guy in the film.
Right.
Whereas Robert was a bit of a nerd as well.
Stephen Hamm, who has been on the show as well. In fact, everyone on every film has been on our show at some point.
Yeah, that was a really good movie, actually. Now, God, you should look it up if you wouldn't mind, because I can't. My phone's in my pocket, okay. In my jacket.
And also, yeah, he is in a band that you might know named The New Pornographers.
Yes, he's in a band called The New Pornographers.
And he's I sort of knew him from being a cartoonist back in the day.
His first film was called Low Self-Esteem Girl,
which was based on a cartoon of his.
And then he did the one with Rob, which his name escapes me. And damn it, I always want to call it The Love God, and I know that's wrong.
Yeah, that's not super wrong, though. Oh, him and I were born in the same year. I won't say what year that was because, you know, no one needs that. Teen Lust and Male Fantasy.
Oh, Teen Lust. That's what this thing is called. Not Teenage Lust. Teen Lust and Male Fantasy is the... Yeah, and that is a good film as well. But anyway, Teen Lust is out there in some form, and I highly recommend it to people. It's a good... It's a fun teen comedy with a bit of a twist, and they have some good times with it.
Cool. All right. Nice to see. Let me just see. Yeah. Make sure... He's got five films, so let's get them all.
Okay.
Teen Lust.
Okay.
12 Takes, which is a TV movie documentary. It just appears in that
one. Yeah.
A Gun to the Head.
Okay.
Male Fantasy. Mm-hmm. A Low Self-Esteem Girl.
A Gun to the Head was... he did for very little money. Very, very little money. He basically had a one set.
I like how big your eyes got with very, very little money.
Yeah.
Oh, the idea of
so you kind of have to approach that one with that knowledge.
Okay.
But it's not bad.
And now Siri is coming on here and asking me a whole bunch of questions. Look, bugger off, Siri.
Would you like to know more about Blaine Thurier?
No, I'm fine. He seems nice. Maybe we'll have him on the show some point. I was watching a...
Would you like to know about Furriers?
There's two topics that I'd like to talk about here, and we...
Okay, Brant, can I just... Before you go, topics down.
I gotta go.
Write the topics down.
No, it's okay.
So you don't forget. But
I do know.
I just want to say one more, because I watched a film the other day, because someone... I've had a few people recommend this film to me.
Okay.
Called The House of the Devil. It's a horror film directed by a guy named Ty West. And so I was kind of interested in this movie. I'd heard that it was creepy and a bit of a slow burn and stuff like that. So, you know, I looked around on my television to see if it was available, and it wasn't. So I just did video on demand. I paid $5 for it. And I paid $5 for it, and I was like, is this what people want? Like, no wonder this isn't working, because it sucks. Like I would much rather be able to go to a video store and rent that movie, bring the video home. Hopefully it would have a commentary track from Ty West, mm-hmm. have a little extra stuff, have a blooper reel or whatever. Just a little bit of fun stuff to give some extra value to this thing. But instead, I pay $5 and all I get is a movie for 2 days and it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
Stinks. I know I could go to this store and pay $22 or go to Amazon and order it, but then I have to wait like a few days to get it. I wanted to watch it because I had some time. So
it sounds like...
For it. And I don't, you know, and I don't like downloading... Yeah. Yeah. Illegally, movies and music. So that's not an option, right? So if it wasn't on Netflix, I had to go the other option.
Yeah, it feels like right now you're looking, maybe you've got a flaw in the system, and there might be a business there.
Well, if it is a flaw in the system, I think that if you're going to do video on demand, you give like the whole video package, so you have like layers of stuff, so you can have a commentary and stuff like that. And I don't know.
What I think would be good is if you had...
And here's one other thing, sorry.
Please.
And the way to make money off this, mm-hmm. people who, is to not have automatic return. You make the person give it back when it's done. So if they forget to give it back, you keep charging them 50 cents a day or whatever and make a little bit of extra money.
Oh, the old VHS.
Hey, why not? Yeah. Why not? But I mean, it would work out in both directions. Like if you're paying an extra 50 cents for it and you know that, mm-hmm. and you're like, well, I haven't had time to watch it, or I'd like to see some of the extra material, then you can keep it a bit longer. It's not gone in 2 days and you're forced to like watch the movie, then watch the movie with commentary. Then
I like the old Netflix idea of you mail the movie back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was fine.
That's an interesting model.
What I would say, and maybe, you know, I'm being a rube on this too, is like, okay, so say you want to watch House of the Devil.
Yeah.
Okay. So you go like, let's look up, whether they got House of the Devil at the local, place. And, they will, drop it off at your place. They'll just drive it to your place,
mm-hmm.
hopefully with a bag of popcorn and a soda pop or something. And they'll go, here you go. And so they give you the movie and they give you an envelope, and then you just pop that in the mail when you're done. And yeah, it's convenient.
The fun thing about House of the Devil is that it's a period piece. It takes place in the 80s. So you get lots of 80s stuff, like people using payphones and answering their telephone and wearing the most hideous jeans. Because that's realistic, right? Like there's no neon in it. There's no one wearing neon. There's no one wearing neon pink or neon green. There are people wearing plaid shirts and really high pants, which are really unflattering. You know, and that was just the time. That was, everyone thought it looked great, and that's it. It does that. So it has that element to it, which is kind of interesting. It also reminds you how very, very boring babysitting was. It's really good at that.
Yeah.
And then and it has some good scares in it as well. It's a good scary movie. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
But
I just want to say one more thing.
Please.
What's weird, though, is the scariest scene is the opening scene of the film to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has a long tracking shot through a kitchen to a woman standing in another room with her back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason to me, there's nothing scarier than someone's back to you. Like if you just pan in on that, if you just sort of track in on that, with kind of scary music playing, set in an eerie sequence, I'm freaking out.
My scariest one is when characters on screen turn and look at you,
look directly into the camera.
Just look at you, the audience member.
Yeah.
Just look at you. They see you.
Hmm, so you
that's
didn't...
really scary. Like the scariest thing to me, like it was.
I almost
weird.
Did a spoiler, but
there was an ad for Ghostbusters. There was an ad for Goosebumps. And it had what, if they'd done it slowly, would have been one of the creepiest things, which they had this like abominable snowman type guy.
Yeah.
And like the commercial's going on, and then this abominable snowman just kind of crawls up from the bottom of the screen and just looking right at you. And I'm like, oh, that's it goes so fast that it's not super scary.
Yeah.
But like that would be the scariest thing for me in a movie. I would hate like in a movie if like if something just slowly like started coming on screen, looking at you the whole time, just looking at you, keeping eye contact. Oh,
I like that you're I like that you're seconding my problem with Blair Witch Project.
Which is?
It happens too fast. So there's no buildup of tension.
At the end of the film. I found it scarier than you.
At the end of the film, yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's I, you know, I was prepared to be scared and I'm like, oh, this is scary. Oh, there's little kids' fingerprints on the, or handprints on the wall. Oh, I know what's going on here. This is really, this is going to be, oh, it's over?
And let's for the record say Blair Witch 2 was terrible.
Book of Lies.
Was that what it was called?
It's Book of Something.
They had one good line in it that gave me hope. And that was the saddest thing was, it gave me hope and it snatched it away.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a thing, and they were interviewing people about the Blair Witch thing.
Yeah.
And there was one guy, and he was saying, yeah, well, there's naysayers who, you know, say nay. And I was like, that's a great line.
Yeah.
That's a great line. This might be a funny movie. Oh, it's the worst. It's the worst film in the world.
Well, doesn't it just prove that those guys just really fluked out with Blair Witch and they had no talent?
We can't scare people the same way with the same thing twice. I throw a weasel at your head.
Couldn't scare
me
once.
The second time I throw a weasel at your head, it's not scary. It's annoying.
Here's the thing. They didn't scare me once.
Okay. Shame on you. Scare you twice.
They set me up.
Shame on me.
They set me up. They like they, you know, they played with me.
Mm-hmm.
Got me excited. Then they walked away.
Like a priest.
Fucking priest. All right.
Hooray for, hooray for Spotlight winning.
You had two things.
Which I did think was the best movie.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. One's kind of a serious one. One's kind of a light one. So let me do light first, then maybe get to serious. We'll see how we
light
do.
Light and dark.
Yin see and how yang. We do. The trailer for Ghostbusters came out today.
Mm.
I don't know if you've seen it yet.
No, I was talking to my daughter, Mary, who was telling me that it just came out.
And what was her feelings on it?
She said, it looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then she added, don't read the comments underneath.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Boy, howdy. You know, it's just like, it's kind of like Trump lets you know who your racist friends are.
Yeah.
You're just like, I want to know which of my friends are misogynist. Let's see how. Woo, that's.
Are they your friends or are they just kind of random people?
I think on Facebook, probably. I'd recognize a couple, but no, not really.
Yeah.
But when I saw it, like, because it's
you blew the mic, by the way.
Okay, fair enough. When I saw it, I was like, oh, this is quite a good trailer.
Yeah.
This is sharp. It moves along at a good pace.
That's what Mary said, yeah.
I think it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. I don't see any reason this needs to be a movie. This should probably be a Netflix TV series.
Why do you want that?
Because everyone in this, with the except maybe Kristen Wiig, who's done a couple of movies, and, you know, we got Melissa. But they all work on TV right now, too. They all work on TV.
But that's where a lot of people start, and then they move up. You know,
well, I don't think it's moving up.
So were you like, when you heard that the 40-year-old version was coming out, were you like, you know what? This should really be a television show because all the actors in it all come out of television.
Oh, that might not be bad.
No, it would be dumb. Like, why would you want to watch an 8-hour version of the 40-year-old virgin?
All right.
Hey, guys, I said those two words and they sounded separate from each other.
Because here's what I watched recently. And, you know, we've discussed this to death, so we don't have to talk about it too much. But Ash versus the Evil Dead, right? Now, if they had come up with an Ash versus the Evil Dead movie, it would have been fine.
It would have been great.
You would have gone, oh, that's good, and we're done, and we're good. Yeah. But when you get a TV series, you can build, can do things, you can
different
play.
Different pleasures, sure. Different pleasures.
You can do that kind of thing. And to me...
And the TV version could have Melissa McCarthy improvising for a half an hour or so.
I don't know if she'll be doing that. She seems to be succinct in this, so that's good.
Good. Well, you saw the unrated version.
Yeah, hopefully there's no unrated version of Ghostbusters. It'll be fine. But when I saw it, I went like, okay, you know, they've got the special effects and these look fine, but they look like just regular special effects.
Yeah.
And these are all people who, you know, generally work in TV as well as film. You could really stretch this out and have some fun and do different cases and do different stuff.
Okay.
And basically, you know, because I was a fan of the real Ghostbusters animated series when I was a kid. And they played around. They had some fun and they did some stuff.
Sure.
And basically with this kind of film, it'll be fine. And it'll make all the money. And it'll do very, very well.
Yeah.
But it's going to be set up. You know, by the numbers, because it is a remake generally.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be, this has to happen by this, this has to happen by this.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that you thought was good is going to turn out bad. Oh my God, now everyone turns against them. Oh, now they're turning against each other. Oh, but now they're unifying to fight the common foe. Oh, but it looks like it's hopeless.
Yeah.
Oh, but they find the thing at the end that makes it not hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they win. Oh, we cheer. We know it.
And so we've all seen World War II.
We didn't know that was going to turn out that way. We're very happy. Okay. And it looks like we're getting a sequel to that, maybe with Trump. So we'll see. So popular. All these remakes are going on. And like the whole Trump-Hitler remake, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, oh, you could really have some fun and extend it and put it on Netflix. And I don't even know if less people would see it on Netflix or not. I don't know. It seems like, you know, I look at like the Marvel movies and I like the Marvel movies, but then I see the Marvel.
The Marvel movies do a lot better than the TV shows.
No, the Daredevil was fantastic.
No, I mean in terms of money.
Oh, yeah.
The whole point of it, by the way.
Understood.
The whole point of it is the money.
I don't know. You don't know how much the Daredevil
No, we don't know. We don't know.
Because Netflix doesn't release the numbers.
But it doesn't need numbers because they pay a certain amount to Marvel, right? They don't pay per view, do they?
I don't know how
they
it works
at all.
They just
pay a package deal on stuff and
plop right, it but I there. Don't know how many eyeballs are falling on Daredevil over the course of, you know, how much time. Because mm-hmm. you're combining then what would be like the opening movie theater run with then the, you know, direct-to-video, you know, DVD sales, everything. All of that Netflix is one big mashugana.
Yeah.
Who knows, you know, how it's doing. But, you know, when I saw that, I was like, well, this is really good. I wish it was a TV series. And that's me being a
yeah.
sour ball.
Yeah.
But I think it'll do well, and everyone seems to be having fun, and it looks fun.
Yeah.
Here was the semi-series.
But here's the thing, though.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm no misogynist, but I think those girls need to get their hair done. No, I don't know what I'm talking about.
There's a good wig joke in there. Not a Kristen wig, but like an actual wig.
Whatever.
I'm
no misogynist. When as soon as you say that, why did you even say it? That.
So
anyway, so this is the dark thing.
That's not really okay. Here
it now is, that you set it up,
it is a bit of a all right. So there's been a series of articles about the Chicago improv scene and sexual harassment in the Chicago improv scene.
Okay. From like historically or more recently?
Recently.
Okay.
Okay. And just to kind of break down a little bit of it. Sharna Halpern, who's a creator of a format called The Herald with Del Close.
Yeah.
And what happened was someone was saying that there was, you know, incidents happening, and she wrote to Sharna, and Sharna did nothing about it. Sharna said, I didn't get these letters. And also, quite often, women who aren't doing well in the company will make up stories. Okay. That then, kaboom,
that
right?
That is the worst response I've ever heard in my life.
It is a terrible response.
Yes.
But and Sharna then has like gone completely the other way, and it's like...
Can I just give you one statistic that you may not know? Actually, more women who have this sort of thing happen to them do not report it at all.
Absolutely.
Then make false reports.
Oh, I know so many people.
And the reason
for that is
this kind of bullshit. But anyway, okay, go
absolutely. On. Well, she considers herself to be a feminist. She considers herself to be someone who women would come to.
Yeah.
She thought she was these things, and so she couldn't comprehend the idea that women wouldn't come to it. So if she doesn't know about it, it must not be happening.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And now she has been schooled on that, and she has, you know, put things in place to counter that. But this is such a common fucking thing, and in the community here too, that like people go, well, I haven't heard of it, and they feel that's the end of it, because if they haven't heard of it, then they wouldn't.
It doesn't exist.
But you're not the person that people would come to.
Yeah.
And you don't know why. You don't know that you did something small. Mm-hmm. A small fucking thing you said was something that made people go, not an ally. I'm not going to bring this up to this person. You know, I had someone like tell me a horror story today that I'm not even sure how to deal with, but blah, 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 blah. But so I was listening to a podcast called The Improv Nerd Podcast, and they had a series of improvisers talking about the subject, and something came up on it that I went, oh, that's interesting, that kind of connected with the movie you were talking about, which was a lot of the men who are into comedy really liked coming-of-age comedies.
Okay.
And in coming-of-age comedies, the idea is usually they're the outsider, the wisecracker.
Yep.
They relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happens and they win the girl. And the girl is the prize to be won.
Yes.
She's not the equal. She is the reward.
Yeah.
For now you've been accepted into society. Your weirdness has been accepted.
Sure.
And called, that's the fantasy.
It's called the 40-year-old virgin. I've seen
that. It's called the every fucking film.
Yes.
You know? It's called the, you know, whatever the strange thing about you is, now it becomes accepted. The world loves you. And as a result, you get the beautiful girl who is, again, the prize.
There are some coming of age movies that kind of break that mold, but yes.
Yes. And that, yeah, so when I was listening to this, I was like, oh my God, that's true. And also, we need better fucking coming of age movies.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, one of my favorite coming of age movies is
Gregory's Girl.
Gregory's Girl is good.
I think that's a good example of a film that kind
Hit
of
me
breaks
with it.
That.
All right, tell us why.
Well, because in that film, you know, he's focused himself on this girl who plays soccer, and he thinks that he's in love with her, and that, you know, and so he asks her out, and he ends up sort of the plaything of these girls who kind of string him along to bring him to the girl who actually likes him. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, she's the one who's having the actual story. He's the prize.
Yeah.
You know, and that's interesting. It's a fun little twist to a film, I think.
No, that's a good angle. I was going to say one of the films that I like that is actually very watchable from the 80s that you're like surprised, oh, this is going to be one of those. Oh, no, you're watching Revenge of the Nerds. Oh, there's a rape at the end. Fuck, why is that there? But is
Drive-ins.
What's that?
Drive-ins.
What about drive-ins? Because you had to have
a rape in order
to
get.
I don't think in the 80s that was still a thing.
Apparently.
Well, in a comedy, it was kind of like the pretty girl's asking for it because she won't go out with the nerd, so he'll show her and put a mask on, and then she'll think she's having sex with her boyfriend.
Oh my god! Is that actual ending?
That is the end of Revenge of the Nerds. He wears a Darth Vader mask.
I've never seen it.
Has sex with her, and then she goes, "You know what? You're pretty good in bed. Yeah, I'm a nerd. Oh well, I learned my lesson, and nerds are good at sex, so I'm fine with this. That you just raped me. Hooray! What fuck? Gah! Horror, bad, terrible.
Let me
tell you the positive one.
Okay.
It's a film called Real Genius. And it's Val Kilmer.
Don't like him? Go on.
Okay. Well, if you saw this film, you might like him.
Watch Lost Souls. And then
I'm not going to watch Lost Souls. It's fine. So so it's a story of a nerdy guy who's going to an advanced school, and he's younger than the college kids.
Okay.
He does, you know, will he fit in? Will he not? And so it's the cool nerd who's like nice to him and, you know, fights against the establishment. And the villain in it is the dean. And the dean is the guy who
played... Dean Wormer?
No, he was the guy who played Walter Peck, the guy from Ghostbusters, and the guy from Die Hard who says, "Hey, John McClane, this is his wife. Hey, everybody, it's John McClane's wife's.
William,
this is her face.
William Atherton.
Yeah, that guy. And in Ghostbusters, oh, we don't need these Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
we can handle it ourselves. He's the 80s jerk.
Yeah, it's weird because he was very good in like Day of the Locust.
He's very good in this as well.
Yeah.
But the love interest, though, is a nerd, but a nerd on equal level with the other nerds.
Okay.
And why I like her character is, even if she wasn't a love interest, she would fit in perfectly as just a character on her own. You take the love aspect out of it, and it's still fine. And also, before we started saying people were on the spectrum, she's clearly on the spectrum in this.
Okay.
She's just that kind of rattling facts kind of person, and is her own thing. And there's no, while there is a couple of, you know, women dancing in bikinis, but there's a pool.
This is a Hughes film, right?
No.
Sure?
I'm pretty sure. But it was written by P.J. Torkvay, who was a guy that who was a man at the time, who later transitioned into a woman.
Oh, he worked on WKRP in Cincinnati.
That's right. Yeah, he's since passed away. Okay. She's since passed away.
Yeah.
It was a really fun, good film that you can watch now without shame.
Yeah.
And that's very rare for 80s movies.
Did you ever see the John Cusack film, The Sure Thing? I think that kind of falls outside of that.
Right, that's Rob Reiner.
That's a Rob Reiner film, yeah. Mm-hmm. Where he goes on this cross-country journey with this girl just because he needs someone to go with. But he's going to California, I think, because there's a sure thing there. There's a girl that he can actually lay there. And so he knows this
right.
is a... But he, you know, and then it everything goes wrong for him. But it's a good film.
Right, that was Rob Reiner's first film, right?
I think, well, was it before Spinal Tap or after Spinal Tap?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question.
We'll never know.
Nope, there's no way of knowing.
There's no way of finding out, everybody. It's a mystery.
So that was a thing with that, and it was like, oh yeah, that probably is the kind of... I think the characters that you identify with through film... I mean, you shouldn't base your life on characters in film, but I could see all these like young guys who want to be funny identifying with all these characters and like, yeah, no, that's terrible. And of course, it doesn't justify anything, but I think what it might do is it might contribute to the environment of it where, you know, then you start doing an improv scene and you're trying to be Bill Murray and you're doing that guy who won't let the girl say no.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, for all the people like Ghostbusters, she says no so often and he won't let it go.
Yeah.
And that's really not cool.
Yeah.
And he's trying to fool a girl off the top, you know, into thinking she's got psychic abilities
because
she's pretty. And, you know, yeah, nowadays that's probably not the coolest thing in the world either. So you take that message, bring it into modern day, bring it into your thing and, bleh. So smarten up, everybody. Is what I'm saying. And also, I think Ghostbusters is going to be fine.
Yeah, look, I haven't seen it. I'm kind of interested.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I believe that some of our casting decisions that we made on our 150th episode, I don't know if you haven't heard that, we had a question and answer episode, everybody. And we, one of our questions was, well, who do we cast in an all-female Ghostbusters?
Oh, who did we say?
Well, we said Kristen Wiig, and we said Melissa McCarthy. And I can't remember who else. Sorry. You have to go back to...
Did we do an Amy Poehler, perhaps?
I don't think I did Amy Poehler.
Okay.
Is she in it?
Nope. Well, okay. I'm sure she is at some point.
Well, but as the three, the four main characters.
The four main characters, yeah. The other one is Katie something from Saturday Night Live. And the other one is Leslie Jones? Leslie Jones, I think, from Saturday Night Live. She is from Saturday Night Live, but something Jones.
Okay.
But she's, yeah. They the trailer is good. Yeah.
Okay, before we go, just one more film
Please.
Thing. Because this is, I rewatched the David Cronenberg film Existenz. Have you ever seen that film? That is a very odd movie.
Yeah, it came out the same time, same summer, I believe, as The Matrix and The 13th Floor. And all three were, there's another world beyond our world.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, like, multiple volcano movies, multiple asteroid movies. This was multiple that movies. Let's see which one does the best. Matrix!
Yeah, Matrix 1.
And so it kind of got forgotten.
Well, I don't think anyone's going to... I mean, it's a very small film. But it's a very odd film because it's essentially... like an hour and a half skit. Like, it's so weird to have a movie end on a punchline. Like you watch it all the time and you're like, oh, it was a blackout sketch. Huh, that was long. It's kind of weird.
What was the punchline?
The punchline, well, am I going to spoil it for people? This was from 1995 or whatever this movie. In the film, Jennifer Jason Leigh is like a game programmer and they're showing this new game, which is called Existenz. And they're showing it to a group of people and they're all going to be test subjects. And then before they can start the test, she's attacked by some sort of revolutionary. We don't know who, but he says, kill the demoness, her name. And it's kind of early Gamergate.
Right.
And so then she and the character played by Jude Law, they have to flee. And so they run away. And then they end up going into the game. And then the kind of the point of it, and then the end of the film comes. And then what we find out is that not only were they in the game, they actually, the whole thing was a game. So they come out, and she's not a game designer. She's just the person who's testing it. He's just some other person. But then it turns out that they are the revolutionaries. And so they kill a character played by the Canadian actor who did Last Night.
Yes.
You know who I mean, right?
Yeah.
No one else does. But
Don McKellar?
Don McKellar, yes. Don McKellar and another and a lady, they shoot them. And they're like, kill the demon such and such and kill Don McKellar's character. And then they're going to kill this Chinese guy. And he's like, are we still in the game? And that's where the movie ends. And you're like, well, a long way to go for a blackout sketch.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. But it is sort of funny. Like, yeah, we're so... the idea is that because they have these ports in the back, in their back that allow them to plug the game
that
in.
That are very sexual.
Of course, it's David Cronenberg.
Yeah.
They have to suck on the thingy and lubricate the little penis-shaped piece that goes
into
the port.
Take that, Avatar, whether you're plugging yourself into your flying dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, it's typical. And then the game pads that they use are like these fleshy things.
Bones. And there's guns made of teeth, fire teeth.
The guns made of bones and fire teeth. That's right. That's because then they can't see them on a scanner, right? So they can be snuck into places. It's a very odd film. Of course, it's Cronenbergian and everything else. But it's odd. It's very odd, very, very strange film. And the only reason I said he was a Chinese guy was because he plays a Chinese waiter in the reality.
Takes place in a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, a lot of it in a really gross Chinese restaurant.
Yeah,
there's a lot of gross stuff. Like, it's very Cronenberg.
It's Cronenberg. He likes to gross you out. Yeah.
It was kind of a return to that for him because he kind of got away with it. And then he kind of returned after doing a couple films of books that could not be made into movies, then he returned to making films that could not be watched.
Matrix, I watched all three of them, and Matrix was, the best, I thought. Existenz, that's interesting. I liked it.
Sure.
13th Floor.
Don't remember that one.
Yeah, no one does. No, that one just,
said the idea that there's buildings don't have 13th floors or something?
I guess so, and it was another reality, But it was like all three of them were like, almost virtual reality worlds, computer virtual reality worlds. And it was like, let's see which of these three will be remembered. That we did.
Matrix.
But if you're a fan of The Matrix and you haven't seen Existenz, go see Existenz. And if you haven't,
they're not very similar.
They're not very similar at all. but why not see it anyway?
Yeah, it is a good film.
And you know what? If I had the option, I would say I wish that you could just order it and someone could bring a pizza and the movie and you could enjoy it.
That would be good.
We'll start that business.
I should start it.
Yeah, Sneaky Dragon.
Commentary tracks.
Yeah. Yeah, because people like a commentary track.
I love commentary tracks. They're actually really great to draw to.
Yeah, they are actually.
Like after you watch the film, then you can just put it on and listen and kind of look up every once in a while when they're
Agreed.
Talking about something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're gonna eventually release commentary tracks for all of these podcasts. And it'll all be us going, what were we thinking? Blah, 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 and so on.
Why did I talk so much about horses' hooves?
Blech. That's fine, no. People like the horse and around segment.
Mm.
Folks, well, why don't you tell us if you like the horse and around segment? If you want more horse talk,
yes.
You know,
be
if
honest.
If you're a naysayer, why not let us know?
Sadly, you had to make that joke.
Yeah, I did. Ah, sadly. Well,
yes.
All right.
Rein it in.
Yeah, we're going to hoof it soon. So sneakydragon.com, that's the home of all your dad jokes.
Mm.
Please go to our message board there and say, stop it. if you want to email us, we're at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com, sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. Always
that's
a treat getting an email and going, oh.
Love it.
I hope Dave responds to this. And go, did you? No, I didn't. Oh, we're bad people. Okay, well, there you are.
Sorry, I'm terrible at writing.
If you want to go on Twitter, why not? That's where people are making all the mean tweets about the Ghostbusters thing. That's @sneaky_dragon. And we also have a Tumblr page, which is...
Sneaky Dragon.
Sneaky Dragon. There you are.
Yeah.
.tumblr.
You don't need all that stuff. You just go to Tumblr and look up Sneaky Dragon. We're there. Follow us. Follow us and love us.
Please do. And I think that is about it. Thanks so much. Let's just throw out a little shout that we do still have shirts and stuff. And they're in my basement, and I want to get them out of my basement. So why not order one? So go to our website, click on shirts, and we'll probably have some new shirts shortly.
Yes, hopefully. Shirts shortly.
Shirts shortly. And yeah, I hope to hear from you soon. This has been a delight as always. I've been Ian Boothby.
I've been David Dedrick.
And for the count of how many ambulances went by, 5.
We'll do that thing.
Yep.
I'm going to bring that kind of coherence to the show today.
Sure.